Hello, and welcome to another podcast for the Museum of Science Fiction. My name is James Shugart, and over the course of the museum's development, I'll be bringing you conversations with some of the most important people in science fiction. Today, Greg Vigiano, the museum's executive director, is talking with Adam Schneider, a member of the museum's board and the man who restored the original 1966 Star Trek shuttlecraft, the Galileo 7. Greg, take it away.
Okay, great. Adam, when did you start collecting TV and film production miniatures?
Well, first of all, thank you, Greg, and hope that the conversation is interesting. I was always been a fan of science fiction books, movies, various types of media. I think I started reading and writing and listening to all of these things back when I was very young in the 60s. In 2006, Christie's held an auction focused on Star Trek, over 1,000 lots of items from the Star Trek franchise. I live in the area, went to go visit the preview, and that was the moment. Boom, I was suddenly collecting screen-used items from franchises, and I really landed on that the exact day you'd want to land if you wanted to have a lot of Star Trek items.
What was your first piece you added to the collection?
Well, at Christie's, they had sold over 1,000 things. I'm sorry, they sold 1,000 things over a three-day piece. So over the 3 days, I acquired 9 lots out of Christie's.
Okay.
I think the single first thing I bid on was the filming model of Space Nine, and that was very expensive. But the first thing I probably won was the Amargosa space station seen in the movie Star Trek Generations.
When was that auction first held?
It was held in 3 days in October 2006, almost exactly 7 years ago.
Incredible. Adam, what does your collection look like right now?
I walked into the Christie's atrium, and there was the model of the Starship Enterprise from the movies. And I saw that and immediately was toured to the left, which showed many, many other of the miniatures. Frankly, having never participated in an auction, never owned a screen-used thing, that was the first thing I'd ever seen. So most collectors do costumes, Kirk outfit or an alien outfit or a Superman costume, that type of thing. My first view was models. I got very interested in the idea of owning some of the actual models used for filming. And my collection is primarily screen-used models as a direct result. Most of those are held in storage at the studio. They're pretty hard to kind of get out of that environment. So the Christie's auction was a very unique opportunity to see a number of them. I think they had 60 or 70, and perhaps bid on them at that time.
And which artifact would you say is your favorite?
Well, in terms of what I own or what I don't own, certainly the Enterprise and the Smithsonian wins hands down as the one that got away. In terms of favorite, you hate to discriminate among your children, so it's kind of hard to say that. The first one I got that really needed energy and attractive and love was the dry dock from the motion picture. This was in the movie for about 7 minutes as the characters whizzed around it and looked at the Enterprise inside. The dry dock had all the problems of the models. It was physically a mess. It needed to be restored. It needed to be mounted. It needed to be lit. And I think there's a lot of the energy that put into subsequent purchases went into dry dock and really taught us about how long and hard and much work it would be to get these things back to snuff.
How large is that filming miniature?
Well, in the universe, I think the dry dock is 1,200 feet long and holds a 1,000-foot Enterprise. But they didn't build that for the movie. So the actual dry dock in the movie was 12 feet long, 6 feet wide, about 5 feet tall. And, of course, they want to simulate a 1,000-foot object that they're trying to show and capture a giant screen. So they over-detail it, show lots of little greeblies and lots of things that you would think have some function when you see them go by in the movie. They're always hyper-detailed. So that on the screen, they read like a bigger object.
What was the restoration time on that one?
First model to get restored requires a question of, well, what do you actually want to restore it to? Because it was used in 3 movies in 2 different ways. And once having decided that, and we decided to go back to the original first appearance, how do you get some of the original parts that have been stripped off? And then who do you use to go restore to? Because I don't have any of those skills. And they are very unique to the modeling community and the Hollywood production community. Through a later auction, I was able to buy the parts that were missing, which was tremendously important for being able to go back to the original vision of the model. And I contracted out with Ed Myrecki, a well-known person in the modeling world, who had done many models for the show, to go do the reconstruction. his work took, I won't have an exact quote, but, you know, certainly 6 months of time was required to bring it back to what it should have looked like. In addition, dry dock kind of hangs in orbit in the movie. In the real world, it really doesn't just hang there. We needed to build a contraption to hold it upright and make it viable for being placed in a house.
Where is the dry dock now?
Well, it's in my garage, occupying what would normally be a very, very important garage spot.
Tell me, which artifact was the hardest to come by?
There's a few categories of artifacts. When the auction occurs, it's really just a question of bidding and getting them. Thereafter, there's a bit of a secondary market, and you're talking to people. I recently had a model that arrived from Greece, and it was just hard to get shipped and hard to clear customs. I would call it hard to kind of organize a transaction for. But some of these pieces are in the hands of the original people who filmed them, or perhaps duplicated them, or perhaps took them home. I don't really talk about the who's and the how's and the where's, but those tend to be the hardest to come by just in the general principle of the original owners really try to keep it somewhat quieter.
Is that a Star Trek model also?
At times. One of the things that's true about this industry is that Hollywood destroys most of the sets, and if the models, which I focus on, are not to be used again, they may not care very much. It's kind of part of the compensation. Yeah, you could take that home. So there's a bit of an industry of talking to the original designers about costumes and about production art and about props. And sometimes, that's how they come out to the marketplace.
Now, a couple of years ago, you found a pretty important artifact at auction, the Galileo 7 from the original Star Trek series in 1966. How did you come to stumble upon such a major, large artifact that was put on the auction block?
I got known in the collecting community as the person who focuses on models and who focuses on restoration, just based on having done a fair number and having had the privilege of being through the experience. Galileo, if you go back to original Star Trek, they only built two ships from what we would now call the Federation of Planets. So even though there's hundreds of species and hundreds of planets and all kinds of, they really kind of built two ships that represented the actual Starfleet. One was the Enterprise, that was reused in a couple of shots as other ships, and the other was a shuttle, the Galileo, also reused in a couple of shots as other ships, other vehicles. So Galileo was sold after this show was over. This is a physical, full-size, kind of bust-size miniature, sold or donated to a school for the blind in California. And then it moved around to a few other people and really disappeared around 1990. The owner basically took it in and kept it quiet. It came up for auction, and solely because I was involved in the collecting community would I have known about it. It was for public auction, but unless you're looking for something, you wouldn't easily be able to find it. It wouldn't actively come up. But a good number of people active in the community found it, identified it. We all talked about how it might go and how to get fix it. And there was a pretty active discussion about whether or not to get it and what to do with.
And what made you take on the project? I mean, it's a fairly large project. What kind of made the decision?
Well, nothing was attractive about Galileo when we got it. And that's just the truth.
I guess you have to see the photos.
You asked really the right question. I have really enjoyed being in the community, touching the franchise, being involved with the production designers and creators, and that has been an enormous privilege over 7 years now, right to this date. And you go back to Galileo and say, okay, I've had the privilege of getting some of the major models, some of the pieces that are really interesting, meeting some of these creators. That one just needed someone to give it an awful lot of loving care. And I view this as something that the community had to step up to, had to go organize and go get right. It's the original Star Trek. It is the first shuttle. It is the one they named the space shuttle after. It is a just incredibly important piece that, to my mind, really summarized how future-looking the franchise was in total disrepair. And I was the model guy. This is, my domain. And I felt that the someone really had to go step up, and it may as well be the someone being my wife or myself.
How was it delivered? Where did it come from? When did the restoration work start?
After the auction was completed and my wife and I had won, went to go see it in Ohio, where it was located. It was not delivered. We had arranged transportation from Ohio, including packing and putting on a flatbed truck and shipping, which immediately led to the question of, what are you going to go do to fix it, and where is it going to go? Because there was no sense in moving it until it had a place to go to. It wouldn't fit in my garage, and there's no sense in leaving it on the lawn. It already had enough time outdoors. We took an extensive look at possible sites for restoration, including looking at prop people who build props and build some of the spaceships, looking at people who do cabinets and cabinet type of work, going and talking to the original builder, Gene Winfield, who is of California and is still active in car restoration and creation. And we finally were suggested by a couple people, including Gene, that someone with experience in boats might be able to do this. I was unfamiliar with anyone in the marine industry, but it turns out they lift big hulls. They take them apart, they put them together, they repair them, they wear a structure. And, of course, you're on the water. The quality is extraordinarily high when you're done. We found a marine repair shop, Master Shipwrights, in New Jersey, relatively close to where we lived. And that just seemed ideal. We could be there every day to watch. My wife, Leslie, was de facto project manager. And we had it shipped to from Ohio to New Jersey near the end of October last year.
So then you got the restoration team in place and transported it from Ohio to New Jersey. Tell me a little bit about how you went about the research process to get the restoration to be accurate.
Getting the restoration accurate was very important because it was seriously, Galileo was seriously deteriorated, and we really, really wanted to go restore it to as close to screen use condition as it could be. This is kind of like restoring a car, where you might lose the frame because it rusted, rather the body because it rusted out, and you kind of be rebuilding that. So we did speak to Gene Winfield quite extensively, and at the end of the day, we have never been able to locate plans for the ship as built. There are beautiful, kind of like make it look like this drawings, but we just have not seen Gene's plans, Matt Jeffrey's plans, anybody's real plans with real measurements on them. But there's a lot of substitutes. First of all, we had Galileo itself, and we net duplicated an awful lot of what we saw side by side, piece by piece. Secondly, there's been an extraordinary internet interest over the years. There are multiple sets of plans about what people saw on screen featuring exact dimensions and measurements. None were perfect. All were very helpful. Third, we got every known image we could get from this TV show. We got every known image we could get from Blu-rays, from the cameramen that were on the set, from behind-the-scenes photos, from negatives of the film, of filming that was shot but not used, any conceivable image we could get to provide us with great detail. But in the end, an awful lot of it was rebuilding what we had to the specifications that we saw. So if the interior infrastructure was constructed a certain way, we had to weld it and fix it and straighten it and do some things to it structurally, but it is the same type of construction done in as close to the same way as possible. Similar with the wood shell, similar with the fiberglass, similar with the paint and the remaining metal parts.
Well, isn't it possible, if you were in fact able to get the original plans, that they might not have been totally true to the finished model because there could have been departures at different stages as to what kind of materials were available as they were building the prop?
Guaranteed. Remember that in theory, Galileo has a metal hull and it's a spaceship and works a certain ways. And in practice, it's a big metal wood construct. So you're not restoring a Boeing 747 to an aluminum shell so that it flies. You are taking a prop and essentially making sure it visually looks perfectly and the underlying construction techniques are identical. But we, in some cases, deliberately did not use the same material, because the needs of a set, which are, you know, a couple of years long, assembly, disassembly, we'll repaint it every time. The Galileo was repainted probably every time it was used, for example, aren't the needs of a longer-term thing that's going to be, in our case, as we say, we eventually donated it. We wanted something that was more durable, more able to withstand, better quality, and something where you say 50 years from now, gosh, they did a good job, as opposed to a prop designed for just a couple of years and designed to have a lot of labor every time it was set up.
So when was the restoration actually completed?
We started October 24th on arrival in New Jersey. The shop was almost immediately flooded by Hurricane Sandy. in the end of October 2012. Took a couple months for the shop to get its tools and its electricity back. It started in earnest approximately January 2013. We were finished in mid-June, and the New Jersey unveiling was June 22nd.
What was it like to look at the final restoration?
The ship has never looked better. The ship has never been structurally stronger. The doors have never been more capable, because everyone knows the famous sliding doors. Recall that the actual prop itself didn't have interior lighting because it wasn't finished that way. It didn't have interior of really any sort. It didn't really even have windows. So we had to construct it in a way that was consistent with the three versions of Galileo, the little thing that flew through space on wires, the big interior prop where the actors hit knobs and, you know, turned, you know, kind of flew it, which was destroyed, and the actual thing that we had itself. So, for example, the doors were designed to be open by stuntmen who were in the inside, stagehands. They actually didn't work, per se, and they had a bad habit of locking up and being no way to open if you were inside or outside. You couldn't actually open the doors. We had to build a mechanism to lock them so that it could be transported safely, as well as a mechanism to be open from the outside as need be. So it was an interesting, great and interesting experience.
Well, the finished work looks like it's ready to fly. It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Where is it? Is it still in New Jersey?
Well, New Jersey would love to have more of Galileo, but we found a home that we thought was really, really super. Back in the beginning of this year, I wrote a request for proposal to a dozen or so different air and space-oriented museums and nonprofits looking for a home. And remember, you know, this thing's the size of a bus. You may love it, but you may not have the room for it. And I wanted the organization involved to be committed to a number of years of display because, you know, this wasn't to be stored in the back warehouse. This was to be on site. Many institutions were very interested, came to visit, frankly, really complimented our choices about how to restore. In the end, we selected Space Center Houston, which, unless you're from Houston, you may not quite know, but it's the visitor center for NASA in Houston. It's the largest single tourist attraction in the city. It gets 750,000 visitors a year. The indoor room has enormous, has three theaters, a series of giant exhibitions about, you know, the various space programs and the space shuttle and the International Space Station. There's the world's largest collection of moon rocks. There's a large collection of flown spacecraft, including Mercury, Gemini, and Apollo. It's a fabulous, fabulous facility. And they agreed that they really wanted Galileo because they wanted to bridge the interest in science fiction to the actuality of space travel. And Galileo is to be the core component of that conversation.
Well, I hope when we get the Museum of Science Fiction, the large physical facility built in Washington, D.C., they may consider some short-term loans to our institution.
We'll beam it over.
Well, I seem to remember there was more than one shuttlecraft on the Enterprise. I think they also had a Columbus. And
I can assure you they had a Galileo, a Columbus, and any other name. They were all this model.
Well, what I'm thinking is if there's an opportunity to build a display object, like a sister shuttlecraft to the Galileo, perhaps we can put that in Washington, D.C.
Well, we certainly know how to build it in New Jersey. It would be probably simpler and easier than rebuilding what we had, because you could use modern techniques and, you know, to kind of get the same appearance, as opposed to, you know, being forced to the original design. Galileo looks pretty boxy, but the truth is it has a lot of subtle curves, a lot of subtle shapes. It assembles and disassembles so it can kind of be taken down a highway. And it is a just a great piece in terms of future Trek shuttles, which all tend to look the same. There's an NCC-1701/7 even in the new movie, Into Darkness. If you look hard, it's there and right in the frame. So it continues to get destroyed every time you see it, but it is still around in the world. And we certainly would love, in addition to Galileo, a Columbus at another site. That would make perfect sense.
Oh, that's excellent. Adam, thank you so much. This was Adam Snyder, Museum of Science Fiction Advisory Board member. Thank you again.
Thank you, Greg. Appreciate it.
That was Greg Vigiano and Adam Snyder talking about Adam's restoration of the 1966 Galileo 7. Visit www.museumofsciencefiction.org to learn more about our plans to bring the Museum of Science Fiction to Washington, D.C.